Welcome back to Dating Games, a modern relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is an author and one of Ireland's leading comedians. Please welcome the warmth and humour of Steve Cummins.
Well, here's hoping my humour is here. The warmth is definitely here, because it's cold out and I'm all toasty warm today. But yeah, I'm delighted to be here, and honestly, chuffed to be asked, Bobby. So yeah.
No, you're very welcome. And I'll take the excuse to rant about winter right off the top, because I've not been enjoying it. I used to love winter. I love Halloween. I'm a witchy person. But something about the pandemic took it out of me. Being trapped inside took all the novelty of like coming home to a warm house, right? And so the fact that it's got so cold so quickly, I hate it. I'm Scrooge this year.
Because I know you're a Halloween boy, right? Mm. You're huge, hugely love that. So I see your point, because I suppose it was the novelty of, you know, when everything shuts down at Christmas time, that you get to big log fires and loads of warm, you know, tasty food and da-da-da. Whereas for 2 years, we had loads. Like, just at the start of the pandemic, I have a neighbor just a couple of doors up. His name is Stan Jablonski. The most squared away human being you've ever met in your life. I mean, his house is immaculate. He's the type of guy that puts on, like, gloves and a tool belt just to change a light bulb, and he'll do it to perfection. Like, he's just that guy across the board. But he had this, like, some friend of his was a landscape gardener and cut down a load of huge trees. So Stan got them to deliver them to him on a low loader. Then Stan, being Stan, he's built like a wall, cut them all into log shape sizes, about 2 tons of logs, managed to light 2 fires, and his wife Beata went, "I don't like the dust in the house." So he went, "Steve, do you want 2 tons of logs?" I went, "Yes, I do." And that was at the start of the pandemic. So right through, that was March, right through the summer, I had log fires going all the time, because I love a log fire. So I'm out of them now, which sucks after 2 years. But yeah, so to roundly go with, I hope you get your Christmas cheer back, or your Christmas, what would you call this, your Christmas longing back?
Yeah, I think I will when we get to Christmas. When it comes to present time and the Christmas TV and being with family, I'm sure it'll come back. But it's something about, like, it's got cold so quickly that I'm just leaning into the grump at this point.
Leaning into the grump. There's the title of your autobiography right now. That's the one I want to. That's what I want to see for 40 years from now. Leaning into the grump. That would be actually, I'd go with that. I totally see it though. I mean, look, the weather is, we got a super cold snap. Also, I think Christmas, everyone's celebrating it from middle of November now. So I think they take some of the sparkle out of it as well. Like, I just got my Christmas tree today. So what date is today? Today is the 12th. Or am I breaking secrets by saying it's the 12th?
No.
This isn't like the New Year's Day special or something. No, but so it's the 12th of December. And I still feel it's a tiny bit early, because I remember 1 year we got it with like the 5th of December, and all the needles fell off the tree. It started to sag quickly.
Oh, no.
Anyway, it's not a Christmas tree podcast, I realize. So yes, I'm a Christmas bunny. By the end of this, you'll be so full of my Christmas cheer, I promise you, to feel good.
I love that. No, that's great. Sign me up. The last thing I'll say while I have the excuse to rant about things of this time of year, why am I seeing Black Friday be more than a day? I know it's gone now, but when people are having Black Week, Black Month, no, thank you. Give me the novelty of a sale.
As much as I would love to just cut out part of that audio and make you look like the most racist human being in the world, what is this, Black Week, Black Month? I've had enough. I'd stick that, to play that on Black House, Black History Month. But you're right. First of all, Black Friday was a stupid idea anyway. Whoever came up with that idea was crazy. Then, as you say, it kind of diluted over here to us. And now suddenly it's Black Week, Black Friday week. It is pretty much a month. And it's just a chance to bleed people a little bit more, you know?
Yeah, because I want to feel I've earned my discount. I didn't realize until I moved into this flat, I was like unpacking with a friend of mine, and everything I pulled out of a packing box, I only paid this for it. Oh, this was half price. This was for free. Don't ask how. And I was like, oh, I have a problem.
No, you have a gift. You have it. That's not a problem. It's only as I've gotten older, because I've never been good at that. I've always been the guy who goes, with your vouchers, you get 5 euro off when you spend 35 quid at SuperValu or something, and I'll stick it in my arse pocket and forget about it. And whereas you're right, that's what you should be doing now. As long as you don't have, a filing cabinet filled with ones that, and you sort out the most evenings. But if you can save a buck with a coupon, more power to you, buddy. Go for it.
Yeah. And look, the logic doesn't really hold up like a lot of things, because there's other things where I'm always paying full price. And I was talking to a mate about this the other day, Ace, who's been on the podcast. And, you know, I don't think anyone has a realistic approach to money. And I think that's how we can transition back onto to dating and relationships. Because I think that's something that comes up a lot, that you get together with somebody and you realize that their approach to money doesn't make sense. They think the same about you, and it can be a whole thing.
And you shouldn't have two people with the same attitude to money getting together for any great length of time. Because I'm flighty with money and my wife's flighty with money. And then, of course, you go, oh, we have a son in college. Have we got to say, oh, yeah, okay, let's go and sort that out. So, yeah, ideally, you want one person who's great with money, which would be you. And then you date someone who's, you know, not someone who's going to piss the money away, but someone who's not that concerned. Which you're both concerned with money. Actually, that might help. If you're both two people bad at money, I think is what we should avoid. Two people bad with money, you'd end up living in a tree somewhere. So yeah, Bobby, find yourself somebody nice. Don't find someone like me.
I love that. And so could you set the scene a little bit of long before getting married, what was your dating life like?
Well, Jane, I was crazy. Because you got to remember now, I'm 52, mm-hmm. right? Which I must hold the record now for the oldest person on the podcast. Unless you got some like old gay guy from the 1960s on early.
We had Hal Cruttendon on, but I'm not going to insult him by guessing his age. If you know him.
I like to think Hal's older than me, but you know what? I'm certainly going to Wikipedia that this, so there we go.
Oh, no, we had Eilish O'Carroll on. There you go. From Mrs. Brown's Boys. Brendan O'Carroll's sister.
Yeah, all right. Thank God. All right. Now, do you know what? Then I'm a spring chicken. So I grew up in the... Like, I was born in 1970. My first kiss was when I was 15. But as I always say, it wasn't just my first kiss. It was my first feel of the boom. Feel of down below. And it was only after a week of casually dating this girl that I found out she was 21 and I was 15. I went, well, I see you tomorrow. She said, no, I have to go and collect my dole. And I'm like, how old are you? She's like, I'm 21. I'm like, okay, that was a bit odd. Lost my virginity at 18, not to her, obviously.
Wait, but I want to pause on her. How did that not come up? How did you meet her that you didn't know the age gap?
I grew up in Moira Austin, Limerick, and she was just a girl in the housing estate. She was a sister of a friend of mine. Uh-huh. And I was just so happy to be kissing a girl for the first time. Well, like, obviously, it never crossed my mind. You know, I wasn't going to go, can I see an ID? Have you got an ID, by the way? Please tell me you own a cat, because I saw a tail go past there along your counter. And if that's not a cat, then I'm hallucinating.
It is, you, yeah. She should have been on the counter, but she loves to attention seek when I'm on a Zoom call.
Of course. Well, look, first of all, she's a cat, and cats do produce their dicks. But so it never came up, and it's not like I suddenly went, oh my God, how dare you, you're 6 years older than me, we'll break up. But it was just, when I was a kid, just, you know, snogging a girl and whatever else. But it was quite bizarre to go from having never kissed a girl to having, you know, I don't know, what's the polite, drop the hand, is that? So it was a baptism of fire for me, certainly, yeah. And then, you know, I was no good at dating then. Then I turned 18, lost my virginity, and that kind of just opened me up. I was suddenly like going, okay, you know, I think for teenage boys, that whole losing your virginity
opened you up. Huge.
It does. I know.
What kind of virginity were you losing?
Even as I said the words, right? Even as I said the words, I went, I'm too classy to mention.
Clearly, I'm not.
I made there.
Shots fired.
Good, I'm glad. Good, I know. You know what? Now I can relax. Fuck, it's great. So, yes, open me up. Well, I think it just got me. I suddenly realized, you know what? I'm not bad at this. My confidence went through the roof. I think every teenage boy probably feels that you can smell virginity. You know what I mean? That girls or boys or whoever you're attracted to just will know. And then the second you have lost it, you suddenly feel like, everyone knows that as well. And then now I'm a man and blah, blah, blah. So I was lucky enough to, I went to the States for, you know, that to 6 months over in America, and I was age 19. And I have a story that I want to tell about that in a while. But that was when it really opened me up to dating. And I was suddenly going, oh my God, because I was Irish in a place with no other Irish people. So my accent was different and I learned how to play that very quickly. So you go up to order a drink, right, at a bar, and you'd order a pitcher of beer. And I'd make sure I stood beside a girl who found attractive. And I'd order, can I get a pitcher of beer, please? And I'd probably put a bit of a brogue on, right? So I'd buy a pitcher of beer. And I go, geez, I'll never understand how you order things over here. Oh, really? Where are you from? Oh, I'm Irish. Oh, my God, blah, blah, blah. And that was a great inn. And that was one summer where, honestly, that was the best dating time of my life. It's just... a lovely American expression, I was banging like a storm door in a hurricane. So this was like, this was a huge deal for me. So then that was that. Then I came back to the States and then just minor dates. But remember, I'm pre-Tinder and everything else. Like, you either had to know a girl or you had to pick up a girl. It wasn't a case of, you know, like, I'm blown away by Tinder. To me, it's like, it seems so easy. Now, I hear people talk about how it's a nightmare. But, like, surely you can do an awful lot of groundwork sitting on your couch at home. And, I mean, if you swipe right, is it swipe right means you like it?
Yeah.
So if you swipe right on everybody, no, surely a numbers game, you're eventually going to match with a number of people.
Yeah.
And then find one that you find least repulsive, and you can date them.
It's funny that you say that, because that is the approach a lot of men have. And as a result of that, Tinder put in something where it limits how many swipes you can do a day. Because what they found in the early days of the app, that men were just swiping on everyone and then seeing who came back and then getting to kind of peruse. And then not only was it kind of like spamming the, you know, how the systems went to work, but also it meant then all these women were matching and not getting a reply because of the way the guys were using it. And yeah, I can kind of like understand the temptation, because men are also getting less matches on there than women. So, you know, they're trying to kind of counterbalance the numbers game there.
And that biological imperative that a lot of men use to be an excuse for cheating. So obviously I need to spread my seed as much as possible. That's been in my DNA makeup since I was a caveman. So that's why I need to flick right on every woman I see. But it's a good idea. What a simple fix, though. Limiting the number of things that you can do. Isn't there a super like? Did I hear there's a super like on Tinder? It's like, kind of going, not only do I like you, but I like you. Like something that
there is. And it's generally, it's a very unused feature, because a lot of people find it kind of creepy. Which, to be fair, you don't have to think about it much to think like there's a lot of layers of apps like that are creepy. Because ultimately, you know, on one hand, it can give you a sort of faux safety of you've both swiped on each other. And so there's some kind of attraction there, even though it's probably very surface level. But then there's something about a super like that's kind of incompatible with that, because then that's kind of seen as too serious to be like, okay, but how can you super like me when you know nothing about me and I've not bothered writing a description on my profile?
I see the point of that, because I think about, like, see, I'm a creature of ego, though. I mean, comedian, for God's sake. All we want is to be loved, and we think we're gods in a lot of ways. Anyway, so the thing is, if somebody contacted me, and a stranger, and goes, I just looked at, you know, what little few words you wrote and that picture or two that you put up, and I think I super like you, I'd probably love it. But I can see why most people wouldn't. More so, again, for women. But then, as Bill Burr put it so perfectly, he said, dating, all the risk is on women in dating. You know, I mean, it really is for the sheer, you know, numbers game of serial killers and whatever else, right? But I got back into Twitter about a year ago, and I never did much of it. I set up a profile, then did nothing. And it's only for paying attention to it, I've seen just how horribly toxic people can be, and men can be.
Yeah.
Like, you'd hear stories, but I'd always think that's the minority. But it kind of isn't. There are so many. Now, of course, and the thing is, I have two sons that I've reared, right? My youngest is 14, my oldest is 19, and they're two incredible young men. And they are. They're great. They're respectful of women, and they love unconditionally, and they're really good, kind of. And there's so many men like that. But there's an awful lot of sleazy, absolute assholes out there. And some of the things they'll say and the comments they'll make under this anonymity of social media is horrendous. So I would imagine being a woman, putting yourself out there and getting that sort of feedback, the most beautiful woman in the world have been called ugly and fat and stupid by these absolute losers sitting on their couch somewhere. Drives me mental.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Do you think in one way that Tinder would make it better, because there's maybe more of a kind of idea of accountability, like a Twitter avatar, like it's a picture of a car and you've got no identifiable, you know, information on there. Seemingly being on Tinder, where it hopefully is your real name and pictures, doesn't seem to make people behave any better. And I think a lot of it comes down to, in that situation, it's that men aren't seeing their behavior. right? Because you've said about like having to look out for it on Twitter because it's not directed at you and therefore you're going to see less of it. But then you look out for it and then you can be like, okay, well, this is kind of changing my perception of people. And if I saw someone I know make a comment like that, I would react to it. I would take that into account of what I think of them. But if you take something like Tinder where it's so gendered because it's a dating app, you're not going to see any men's profiles, let alone the messages they're privately sending to women.
Absolutely, yeah. No, fair play, honestly, because I always say it's very rare. No man has to worry about how he's getting home after a date, usually, right? I had a perfect example. I was in the laughter lounge. The last night I was in the laughter lounge and I was getting the bus home and I met my next door neighbor. And he's a lovely guy. You know, you've seen me work. But after a gig, you know, you're there for a couple of hours and it's very full on and everybody comes up to you afterwards and da-da-da. So I remember when I saw my neighbor, I had that moment of, oh, I don't want to make conversation for an hour on the bus, right? So we chatted briefly and he's a lovely guy. And then just we were about to get on the bus, he goes, Steve, he said, I can imagine you. He's a real considerate person. He said, I imagine your head's wrecked. He said, I'm going to go upstairs. You just get your head, just chill out down there. And I was like, I remember when I got off the bus, I walked up with him and I said, it was such a considerate thing to do. But the thing was, while I was sitting downstairs, he was upstairs. Suddenly, this young black woman came and she sat down in front of me. I'd barely noticed her in my periphery. And it was only when I was getting off the bus, I recognized she's a sister of a friend of one of my sons, right? And when she got off the bus, I said, oh, hi, should I even recognize you? Quick chat. And I said, well, at least you got people to walk you up now because myself and our neighbor were there. And she said, no, Sam, who's her brother, said he's waiting for me in the car. Now, the bus stop, I'm not kidding, is 150 yards that way. But she, not only had she arranged for her brother to collect her from the bus stop and a short walk in a little village, we're in Rush, but also Paul was able to tell me she'd been upstairs on the bus, sitting down, minding her own business, and some guy came and sat beside her with loads of empty seats on the bus. So then she gets up and she moves downstairs and sits near me, which I have to admit, I was quite flattered at least that I didn't smell of creepy. But like, it really hit home to me. Like that one journey home at 11:30 in the evening for that woman involved a creepy guy sitting beside her on the bus when he shouldn't. And then that she'd arranged a lift home like she always does anytime she's coming in the evening. And it was so telling for me. Like, I just go, I get on a bus, I get off a bus. I don't worry about things. If I was dating now, I wouldn't be going, I wouldn't worry about going back to a woman's house if I was dating. Whereas if I was a woman, I would be very flaming slow to go back to a guy's house at night if I didn't know him really well and even then. So it's a lot harder for women. So it's there.
That's so well illustrated, that contrast, because the biggest threat for you that night was your man's kind of boring. Like, boredom was the biggest threat to your life.
Geez, you put that beautifully. That is exactly right. That was my only fear. And I had walked down Abbey Street and I'm walking past Wetherspoons and there's drunks and there's everything else. None of that has even crossed my mind. My worry was I could be bored. Her worry was I could have any sort of creep come on to me all the way on the bus and who knows what he might do.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody else keeping an eye on me. And then when I get off the bus, I might have, if I had to, even 150 yards through, like, and this is Rush. We're a little village by the sea. The sea's right over there. It's not like we're, you know, in the heart of Moyross where I grew up. And by the way, I tell you, women in Moyross would beat the crap out of you. But yeah, it's crazy. So, yeah.
And it also, you know, it doesn't seem at times like a million miles away from, you know, women historically being treated as property, right? With this idea that you marry, you go from being the property of your family to then being married and or sold off into another family. And I really believe in that because I see that behavior all the time. I'm really like hyper-tuned to it where, you know, let's say I'm meeting a friend for drinks or something. She'll come in and you see all the guys kind of check her out. And then she comes and sits next to me and maybe we're enough of the same age or because it's just the two of us, they just assume we're a date and therefore she's seen as mine and they stop looking. But they stop looking because of her proximity to me, not because she wasn't giving them any attention or she was clearly on the way to meet somebody or any number of other factors where she wasn't looking at them in return.
I'm a stepper in her. If I see something, if I see anything, I'll step in, always, right? Yeah. I've always said, rare bold by son, the one mantra we've used, and it's across the boards, if you can't help, you must help, right? Doesn't matter what it is. Someone's pushing a car and you're not injured and you've got 20 seconds, help them push their car. If someone's carrying shopping, man or woman, and it looks heavy, go over and help. And I do it all the time, and so, but that also goes with, if I see creepy behavior. I remember years ago when I was first dating my darling wife and we were living in London and we were on the tube one night And there was, I was just sitting there, blah, 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 farting away in my own head, what have you. And Nuala just nudged me and she pointed down to the opposite end of the carriage. And she went, Steve, look. And there was four guys and there was one girl sitting down. There was four guys and one of them was talking to her. But it was that kind of, you know, that leaning down and all that. And done that. And it was properly, you could see he was intimidated. Like this.
Yeah.
So, and Nuala just went, and we were only dating barely at the time. And she just went, go on, do something. And so I was like, hey, dude. And I was a comedian at this stage, right? And it was like, could we kill? I go, dude. And eventually the guy turned around and goes, what? And he was slightly heavy. No, I'm fast, but he's slightly heavy. I went, dude, when I see you, two words spring to mind. Slim and fast, right? And everyone started to laugh, including his mates. He's like, what? So he started kind of mouthing stuff at me like this. And I went, why don't you talk to me and leave her alone, right? And then the guy's like, oh, what the hell? So next thing, it's Acton Town, which was our stop, because we were out by Heathrow. So we had to get off the thingy. And I'm going, wouldn't it be nice now if the girl got off the train and he happened to have to stay on? Well, the opposite happened. She gets to stay on. He gets off with his 3 mates, right? And so now I'm there on the platform with my darling wife and me and him and his 3 mates. And he's still a bit pissed, right? But he was a creepy dick, so I didn't really care. But he comes up to me and then I just went, where's your accent? Because you know me from years ago, but I'm really good here for accents. I said, you South African? And he went, yeah, they were just after winning the Rugby World Cup. I mean, I couldn't give a toss about rugby. I just knew it. And I went, oh, my God, you guys, the rugby. Jeez. Next thing you know, bro hugs all around. Oh, man, you're great. And so I'm like, I didn't have to get my ass kicked. But it's like, if I had gotten my ass kicked, it would have been worse. Because I'm not saying the guy was going to attack her. But, I mean, if everybody stepped up. Because people say to me, you know, Well, you can't really expect everyone else to do it. And I don't. But there's enough of us who can. Like, I'm a big, strong man in my own way, right? So I can certainly do it, but the vast majority of people won't because they all have the same excuse. Whereas, like, when did you ever see somebody running down the street after stealing something and the security guard chasing them and then running, say, down Henry Street or Grafton Street? Everyone should be just casually sticking out their foot and tripping the dude. Just for me, because we all could get involved in that way. I once stopped a robbery of scratch cards years ago, but it's not to do with dating. I'll tell you some other time. But same deal. It's like I saw a robbery happening and I had to do something. So I just, what it was I was in a queue. Two guys were stealing a lot of scratch cards. I leaned over, took them off and said, fuck off. And the two guys, what? And I'll never forget because I was buying two Magnum ice creams, right? And they run off. They realize they look at me. They go, okay, he's not going to leave us go. They run away anyway. And I just go back into the queue. And I get up to the counter and I go to the one. I went, can I get these? Oh, and by the way, those two lads tried to steal those from me. And she's like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I said, it's okay, it's fine, it's fine. And then she went, oh my God, thank you so much. That'll be $190. And she charged me for the friggin' magnets. I'm like, no, it seems petty. But I was like, surely, surely. And I just at least offer to me to give them for me for nothing after me risking my life. And of course, as all great stories go, I walk out and the two guys were waiting for me. Just down about 100 yards down the road. And I was walking down to meet a guy. I worked in children's. I was walking down to meet him. And as I get close to them, it all tickled me. The magnums in my hand and how much it had cost. They should be sitting under a bridge somewhere scratching scratch cards and hoping to win 100,000 if it's stolen. And it all tickled me. So I started to laugh. And so I'm laughing, walking towards these guys. And then they just smeared themselves against the window and let me walk past like I was a crazy person. So anyway, nothing to do with dating. I'm sure you can edit this, can you?
No. I love that story because, I mean, that's something I've learned to do from this show. And I'm sure you'll understand what I mean by this. I can fake laugh very convincingly now. It's become way more useful in the rest of my life because there's nothing like laughing in somebody's face to take all the threat out of them.
Instantly. It's a great tool. It really is.
And it will infuriate them more than anything, more than fighting with them, more than because it's just the embarrassment of it, you know. And
never laugh at someone when you're driving. If you get into a road rage incident with someone, because that's your right, that pushes them over the edge like you would not believe. Laughing at them, that everybody can handle someone sticking up a finger or two fingers or doing the wanker gesture. But if you laugh at somebody, that can really push them over the edge. So but use it sparingly. It's a great power to have, but you got to be careful when you do.
Yeah, that's very true. But no, you've reminded me of, you know, how often there are these experiences where we should be stepping in and like how it would solve a lot, you know, if men were policing each other. And I find it funny because I hear what you're saying about like, it, you know, it can be intimidating to intervene and, you know, the examples you've given aren't exactly kind of low-key, you know, low-threat ones. But also, ultimately men do police each other all the time. They police like the idea of masculinity in each other. They police, you know, what kind of things are cool to say and not say. And a lot of this comes out of that same behavior. So the same reason why men think they need to be pursuing sex over love, the same way they feel they need to be aggressive in the pursuit of it at times, is partly because of how they're informed by their friendships and that certain kind of schoolyard mentality that we can be around growing up. And so if that was flipped and instead it was like, no, you were rude to her, that's unacceptable.
My son is 19. There was one guy in their friend group and he was suddenly no longer in the friend group. And I was there, why? And he said, well, he cheated on his girlfriend and he did it twice. And I was just kind of, I was quite blown away by it because I was going, I need that moral. And they said, well, yeah. I mean, it was a horrible thing to do to her. And I was so pleased hearing him say it because he wasn't just going, you know, when I was growing up, it would have been considered, keep it quiet. You know what I mean? That's lads and lads and spreading your seed. Whereas now it's like, no, everyone's a person and everyone has feelings and everyone is capable of being hurt by someone else's actions. And when they police themselves like that, it's incredible. But like, you never find, you never have a situation where you go, well, that guy's really, really nice, but all his friends are assholes. It doesn't happen. If your friends are assholes, then you're an asshole too, probably. Because if you're not calling your friends out, for example, I wouldn't have a friend be, you know, racist or homophobic or anything like that. I would nail them if they did. Even if they tried to do it jokingly, I'd be like, what is wrong with you? And even if someone gets drunk and does something stupid, and like there's someone like, I don't know, because anybody can be drunk and just kind of, I don't know, look at you, darling, blah, blah, blah. I'd be like, give him a slap on the head, go cop on to yourself. And you're sorry about that. He's a moron. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if more people did that, honestly, would help.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, I think it is changing. Like, I think, you know, your son and like this kind of younger generation coming up now, there is a noted difference. I'm reminded of like only recently I was having drinks with some people from work and they're all a bit younger than me. I don't know how we ended up on this topic, but we were talking about abortion rights. That's a conversation that's more in the zeitgeist in Ireland because of the referendum on it. And, you know, there was obviously catches to that conversation being had so much for, you know, those who it most affects in society, you know, those rights being debated so publicly. And yet there was something beautiful about sitting down with like three other blokes who were all younger than me, and they were all so articulate on why they believe women should have that access.
And an informed opinion. I find young people these days, because they have access to vast quantities of information, obviously, right? But what they do is they actually, a lot of them, will source and look and go, okay. So when you ask them, why are you in favor of a woman having control of her reproductive rights? They'll tell you exactly why. And it'll be the right reasons. Not like, well, I'm dating a girl who works in an abortion clinic or something. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, like, I think the young people nowadays...
That's so great to hear. Because I was joking to you off air about how often I interview married men and they tell me all their insights on relationships that they've just been given from their wife, you know, of like, oh, I learned how to be a good husband because she told me to do this, and this. And, you know, I joke about it because I sit in those interviews sometimes and I'm like, why am I not interviewing her? That's clearly where all the good material is coming from. But like, that's lovely to see that people are working on themselves rather than that common male mentality of like, oh, a woman will like fix me up. She'll kind of set me on the right road. Like somehow my morality is burdened on whatever woman I end up with.
There's a real immaturity if you think about it. It's like, I'll keep being the same sort of dick I am until some woman fixes me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas it's up to you. Honestly, fix yourself if you can. Now, as I was saying, like, young people nowadays are... my sons are 10 times the man I was at their age, and they're 5 times the man I am now. And I think it's because, one, now I will say this, I very actively, I mean, really consciously parented our kids all the way. For I think parenting begins from birth, and you got to really be consistent and everything else. But their friends are the same, and their friend groups, and their attitudes. And like pride parades, like my son's been to the last 3 or 4 pride parades. He's not gay, but of course they go to them because it's celebrating everything to do with sex and sexuality. And the great thing is I get to go, like the whole pronouns changes and everything else. I remember I'm 52 and I want to get it right. Well, so I keep going. It's great. I get to go to my sons and go, okay, what am I missing here? And then they'll go, like my son especially, well, this is why non-binary is a thing and why it's important. I'll be like, okay, now I get it. I'm not in the echo chamber of you know, the journal where people are just in the comments giving out about stuff. I actually have people, young people who are informed and much more informed than I am. And they're the ones who are educating me. And it's great. Because, you know, obviously there's always going to be bad apples, but the vast majority of young people are way better than we ever were. Well, you're way younger than me. I put you in the camp with my sons. I really do.
Okay. Fine. Sure. So, no, I agree. It's lovely to see. And by contrast, we should get around to you sharing your dating story.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
I told you I run my mouth, right? Here's the thing. Back in 1989, I believe it was, I went to the US for 6 months. That's when I was doing my dating and everything else, right? And one woman I dated, now you got to picture this. It's the late 80s, right? I'm from Limerick in Ireland. I finished my leaving cert at 12 o'clock. And at 1 o'clock, I was on a bus going to England to get a flight to New York to then fly to Chicago to get to where I was going, right? First time ever leaving the country. First time at the time in Limerick, there was only two people who were non-white Irish, and they were both Pakistani doctors working in the hospital. And I was going to play, you know, multicultural, the whole thing. So anyway, long story boring. I started dating this girl. She was a blonde air stewardess who drove a black Pontiac Trans Am. Now, if you're not familiar with the car, do you remember did you ever hear the movie Smokey and the Bandit?
Yep.
Yeah, well, that was the car, right? So this cool, you know, you see the one with the flames on the front of it? That was the car she had. So you picture little horny little 19-year-old Stevie. She's a blonde air stewardess who drives that sort of sports car, right? So we're dating for about maybe a couple of weeks. And this particular night, we'd gone out for a few drinks and we went back to where we were staying. And it was where I was staying. It was basically a summer camp, but it was after the camp had closed. And I was just staying there for the last couple of weeks before flying back. I'd been out with a friend of mine who's Scottish. He met this girl and headed off. So this girl, Shannon, her name was. Shannon and I went back and we're making out in the car, right? Necking, I believe, was the expression back then. Next thing you know, we're in the car and I heard a car come up, pull up behind us and stop. And then there was a huge spotlight just shining right in us, right? Like a massive spotlight. So I just turn around and I start to open the car door to get out because I thought, because Jim, my friend, had gone away with this woman in a pickup truck. And I thought, that's them. They've come back and they're taking the piss. As I just put one foot outside the car, I hear an incredibly authoritarian woman's voice going, "Get back in the vehicle." Instantly, I knew it was a cop. There was no question. The voice was too perfect. Had to be a cop, right? So I close the door, get back in, push down the window. And I'm in the passenger seat. Shannon was driving. And I lean out the window. I go, "Is there a problem, officer?" And I turn to Shannon. I've always wanted to see that. She goes, "Just stay in your vehicle." Right? So then I could tell, okay, this is quite serious. She would be really, really dreadful. Yeah. So we're sitting there for about 5 or 6 minutes, right? And Shannon is kind of going, "Kiss me, Steve." I'm going, "No." she was just, you know, getting that kind of frisky, blah, 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 blah. Whereas I'm going, no, this is not, this is something I can feel. There's something dodgy here. Next thing you know, another police car comes flying down. No sirens, but the lights off, right? Flashy, flashy, flashy lights. Pulls up behind. Obviously, there's a bit of a conflab going on. Next thing, to the passenger side window appears this. I'll never forget it. You could see a stomach, the Sam Brown belt it's called. That's the cop belt with the gun. And I could just see the bottom of his badge just in the window. And he leans down. He's a big, huge, red-haired guy. Big, huge, big, massive square head. And he goes, "Sir, can I see some ID, please?" And I'm there, "Sure, no problem." And I pulled out. It was a photocopy of the page of my passport. Now, you want to know how old I am? This is how old I am. Back then, the passport, parts of it were handwritten, right, including the date. So what you do is you'd photocopy your passport, then you would Tippex off the date, you'd photocopy that, then you'd write in the date, because I was only 19, and you had to be 21 to drink. So, and then you'd photograph that, and then you go, "I bring this with me to bars because I don't want to lose my passport when I'm out." And all the bouncers would be like, "No problem, get it, right, you're fine, right?" So I hand the cop this, he goes away with this, comes back after like 5 minutes, "What is this, sir?" I said, "Oh," so I explained the story. I didn't obviously tell him about Dr. Lynch. I said, "Oh, it's a photostat of my passport." And he goes, "Okay." He said, "Sir, could you get out of the vehicle, please?" "Sir, I'm going to show no problem." So I step out of the car like this, and Shannon gets out the other side. "Could you open the trunk?" right? And I'm still going, why the hell are they talking to me? She's the driver. I'm just sitting like, what were you doing here? Oh, we were just up having a few drinks and now we're kissing, right? He said, open the boot, and he reaches in, he takes out what they would call a tire iron, what we call the wheel brace, and he shines his torch along it, right? Like looking at it real close. And then he just puts it back in, he goes, it's okay, you're free to go. And I went, sorry, would you mind telling me what was going on? Because it was now him and a female cop. The female cop had first been. And he said, oh, he said, we're looking for a person who frequents this area for a double attempted homicide this evening. And you've completely matched his description. And I just had an epiphany. And I went, if I say a name, and then I went, sorry, forget it. And he goes, what? I said, if I say a name, would you tell me if I'm right or wrong? And he goes, say the name. And I named my boss's son, right, who looked similar to me. But he was always creepy. Always, everybody, every woman working there would always go, no, I don't know, we're near this guy. And he goes, that's him. And at that exact moment, came over the radio. You know, he can never even understand it, but they can. And they went, Chimon goes, we got him, we got him. What had happened was, he was sitting on the courthouse, they found him sitting on the courthouse steps, holding the poker. He met some woman, went back to her place. Obviously, she got freaked out in some way. He tried to kill her with a poker. Her roommates came back. He tried to kill her and then ran. And then, of course, cracked up was found on the thing, right? He ended up getting 99 years for that, right? But the finale of the story was, as they're saying good luck and goodbye and all this and da-da-da, the woman cop said to me, she said, I'm very glad you stayed in the car, sir. And I was there, why? She said, if you tried to get out a second time, she said, I had a gun trained in your head for 15 minutes, I would have shot you. And I swear my
America's.
My legs, and it was the only time I've ever felt it, my legs literally felt watery just for one split second. Like just a tiny wobble. I was like, I was nearly shot and killed. And like Shannon's all turned on beside me. I'm thinking it's hilarious. Is there a problem, officer? And there was a gun trained to my head. So there's a date story for you, if you want one. Which yeah, wow. It's crazy. It was so crazy.
I was not expecting any of that. But yeah, only in America. I found out a stat recently that if you divide it down, the number of guns in the States by the number of people, it works out at 1.3 guns per person. And I think that is how ridiculous the situation is there, because most people don't even own guns in the States. So that means the people that do, they usually have more than one. So any kind of argument of like self-defense or whatever, it's a wild place. And what a story.
Around that time, I ended up getting drunk with two rednecks who tried to beat me up. And they ended up, because I stood up to them and I went, just cop on to be a moron. And then they were like, you're okay. So then we ended up getting drunk with these guys. And we ended up going, it's a long cop, but I wouldn't tell you the story. But both of these guys lived in trailers, right, with their wives and children. One of them had 11 guns and the other had 9. And that's all you need to know. Like a gun, your average handgun is about $300. Your average rifle, probably the same. So they could not afford, you know, shoes for their children, but they had more weapons. And one of them did in one of his rants, without a hint of irony, use the, they'll get my rifle when they pry my cold, dead hand off it. Like, and it was my first time ever hearing the cliche actually spoken out loud. It was crazy. But Americans and guns, it's beyond their culture. I can't see how they could ever stop. I mean, there's too many guns around, too great access. Sure, people are allowed to make their own guns, for God's sake. They're 3D printing guns. So what are you going to do? But if you're on a date and someone who clearly sounds like a cop tells you to stay put, stay put. If you're, I will say this, the sex that night was phenomenal afterwards. It was
like, yeah, you couldn't believe you were still alive. That's why.
That was it. It was literally that moment I had a proper brush with death. And also, I had been living with a guy for like 4 or 5 months who was capable of that level of extreme violence to women and everything else. And we know, we all knew he was creepy. And he liked me because I liked people and I was nice to him. Like a lot of people avoided, I wouldn't avoid him because, you know, just being nice. Why would you want to, you know, he wasn't doing that to me kind of thing. And obviously, if I witnessed something, I would say something. But we're living with this really creepy weirdo. It turns out he was nearly a proper killer.
And yet this does kind of lead to something I wanted to ask you about, which is conflict resolution. Because I know, like, in terms of your career, like working with young people, a lot of the stories you've told me today, you're really good at just like taking the negativity out of a room. You know, I see it in your comedy. You've got a way of, you know, kind of having fun with a heckler in a way where somehow they can shut up, but also they don't kind of go away butthurt about it. And I think that's quite a distinct skill. And so does that then carry over into to married life? I don't imagine you're having like screaming, shouting matches.
Well, we do. We have the odd one, but I'm very lucky, right? And I know it sounds, and this sounds so twee and cliche, right? But I absolutely adore my wife. Like, we're best friends beyond best friends. We just love hanging out together, like properly love hanging out together.
Sure.
And it's very lucky. I mean, and we, but by the way, we get how lucky. Like, we were together, we're married 22 years. We're together 27, 28 years. And from the moment we started dating, we moved in together very quickly. I told her I love her, I think, on our second date. And meant it. And even she was going, okay, you weirdo. That's not the normal thing to say. I went, I don't care. It's true. So
did she call you out on it, do you remember? Or did she just try and move the conversation on?
She stiffened like literally, even my big clumpy feet noticed that I have definitely said something that she doesn't like here. Do you know what I mean? And then I just doubled down. And I said, I know it's weird for me to say it, but it's true. Like, you'll find out. I'll prove it. Or some words to that effect. And then she was still like, all right. But I kind of like, because she'd liked me for a year anyway.
Uh-huh.
So I don't, that wasn't like, and this is why. Good thing I don't date. Imagine if I was dating and I did that. Well, the thing is, I was right. This is the whole point. I'd never said that to anyone like that before. But I knew I was right. I knew. And I'm still, to this day, I know I'm right. I mean, as soon as we're finished talking now, I'm looking forward to having dinner with her. You know, and it sounds quite simple and twee, but we're very lucky. But fighting-wise, you're so right. Like, when I deal with a heckler in a comedy, now you've seen me, if I have to, I can destroy you. But what I'll do is I will start off on a much lighter footing, and I will do it gently at first, and I will try my level best to have the heckler put in his place, realize that he could be easily destroyed, but I was nice not to. So as you said, they don't walk away but hurt, and then everything's fine. And you'll have hecklers coming up and shaking my hand after the gig. I definitely got that from working with young offenders and young people because, you know, a lot of the times I had to deliver bad news or I had to give out to them about something. And I'm not, you know, Mr. Touchy-feely. I will tell you exactly what you're doing wrong, but I'll do it in a way, I suppose, I'm not judging you when I'm talking to you. So even the heckler, I'm not judging. I'll go, I get it. You've had a few beers. We're all here to have the crack. But you don't want to be a dick to everybody else. And then they're kind of like, oh, okay. So what he's saying is he could be the same. He'd be in the same position as me, but he's just pointing out not to or whatever. And that kind of works. It works well. It definitely works. Otherwise, I wouldn't be as busy as I am right now. But when it comes to my wife, when we first started dating, she comes from a larger family and they're very much repressed. I call it repressed in that if you're mad about something, you don't tell the person you're mad about. You might mutter to somebody else and blah, blah, blah. So I've always been, I'm angry. This is my, I'm vocalizing what's bothering me. And then Nuala would. But when we first started dating, she kind of almost withholds the love. And then eventually she realized I was still going to keep giving out. Well, I wasn't going to get affected by that because I knew she loved me. So then she started shouting back. And it was great. It was cathartic for her. But now we still don't. As I said, because we're getting on so well, we fight maybe once every few weeks to a month. And roaring fights would be even less than that. You've got to remember as well, when you're together a long time, you get good at spotting the other heading to that direction. Or you spot your both go, okay, we're heading for a row. Let's veer off course. One of the best things I ever heard, Stephen King said in an interview once, and he said, some of the most important words in marriage are never spoken. It's when you could say something, but you know if you did, you're going to escalate to something way worse and you're going to let something up. And it's not about hiding your feelings or not talking about it, but in that moment, this would be the wrong time to bring up what you're thinking of bringing up, so don't bring it. And it really, it can help.
I love that. And on that note, actually, we'll start moving on to our rules of the game. So do you have a bit of advice, something you try and live by in relationships? Or, well, in this relationship, I guess.
So good. In this relationship, feed them. It doesn't matter who you're with. If you're an even half good cook, if you feed the person you're with, and my wife's lovely, it's slim. It just gives you this vision. She's like 250 pounds arm wrestler.
Yeah, it's not a fetish, I hope.
Yeah, exactly. Go, have another $8, my love. But like the one thing, like especially like obviously my wife's been pregnant, you know, twice with the two babies the size of the boat, 6 foot plus. You know, how I showed love a lot of the time throughout that time is because, you know, she was always hungry and, you know, she was growing a person, of course she was. So I taught myself how to cook. For her, really. And she was working, at the time, she was working a job which was really difficult and very stressful. So Monday night dinners were always amazing because it was the start of our week, so I'd make sure that I cooked something really elaborate, really nice on a Monday. And then I got really good at cooking. So, and like maybe it's I'm an Irish mammy on some level. So I'm kind of good. I feed you up, that'll make you feel good. But when it comes to, I suppose food isn't exactly it. I think it's about if you can nurture the other person as best you can. Because when you care about someone, you know what they need. You can know when they come in the door, you know. Sometimes they need a hug. Sometimes they need a kick in the arse. But sometimes they need a bit of loving or a bit of a warm bath or whatever it is. And if you're there for them for that, sometimes it's just an ear. Listen to them. That's about it. No matter how dull you think what they're talking about is, give them a listen. Because you never know. Like I'd say, especially when it comes to rare children, listen to your kids talk about Peppa Pig and shit when they're four. Because then they'll talk to you when they're 14 and 15 about other things. You know, like you need to have the lines of communication open from a very young age with kids. And when it comes to relationship, lines of communication open right from the very beginning. Because if you're honest, as honest as anyone can, no, everybody has their own secrets or whatever. But if for the most part you're honest with each other and open and talking about things, because it's when you're not talking about things. Nothing makes me sadder than when I see a relationship fall apart because a woman goes, and it's just this, I'm always saying because a woman, so men can obviously do this too. You know, if a woman's then like going, well, it wasn't working for a while and we just kind of drifted apart and da-da-da-da. Then, shit, if you had said something, you know what I mean, 3 months before or 2 months before, maybe you still would have broken up, but at least you tried. I hate this. There's nothing sadder than something just fizzling out because you just stopped taking care of it and paying attention.
No, I agree.
But another rule should be as well, like, keep making the effort with the other person. Because if you get too complacent and too comfortable, like, Shiver, this is terrible. And look, as a person who is overweight, so I'm not in any way fattest or picking on people, but did you ever watch a couple just get fatter together? And you know it's because they both kind of decided, well, I'm settled with you now and da-da-da. But the thing is, you know, in 2 years' time, one of them is going to go, I don't like how I look anymore. And they're going to start trying to change it. And then their interests have split apart and da-da-da. Now, if you want to get fat together, absolutely do. But be open about it and honest about it. You know, stop being complacent. Like, don't always wear your dirty underpants or your underpants with your holes in it. Or, you know, if you're going to go to bed, don't always wear the woolly socks and the woolly jumper when you go to bed. You know, keep a little mystery going. You know, a bit of freaking eroticism. I refuse to poop in front of my wife, and that's after 27 years. I will not. And that's the rock our marriage is based upon there, Bobby.
I love that. So many good rules there. I'm actually going to make mine kind of based off that, actually, because I think there's really something to figuring out what makes you attractive. Like, I think sometimes we can kind of shy away from this, and I think it's particularly a straight male thing for whatever reason, that we think it's some way preferable, you know, to be oblivious, to be like, oh, well, I wouldn't know what women would find attractive about me. Because I'm straight, it wouldn't occur to me what ways I might be attractive. And I think there's a real loss there, because that is where you can lose that effort. Where without that kind of, like, perspective, there probably are a lot of things that are going to go by the wayside. There probably are a lot of things like, oh, that could turn somebody off. If it's never crossing your mind, like, how am I attractive to this person? What kind of things do I need to maintain? I think that's important.
Just say it. I think that would be a great starter thing to do at the beginning of a relationship. And actually for you both, and go, what is this as an ego boost, if nothing else, for each of you, where you go, and it could be like, I think you're great here, a great smile, great whatever. But it could also be like, I know one of the things that Nona fell in love with me about was, like, we worked in the same children's home together in London. That's where we first met. And, you know, we had kids who were very damaged and with all sorts of problems, whatever. And then she'd see me. So it was one kid who was being taken away to a rest flight for the weekend because he was just out of control. And when they arrived to take him, he took off running. So I went running after him. And eventually, I was faster than him. So I caught up with him and he just gave up. He just stopped and he sat on the ground. And instead of me grabbing him, I sat on the ground beside him. And I put my arm around him and I just talked to him for like 20 minutes, going, look, you'll be back here in 2 days. This is just a circuit breaker. What I didn't know, Noon only told me like 3 days later, she had come around the corner and seen me, saw me stop. And she said, I could not have loved you more than watching you do that for a young kid. You know, and like, she told me that. And it really, for me, it was a lovely little validation of the work that I'd been doing for years. Like, I'd done stuff like that many times, but I didn't think it was a lovable thing to do. I just thought it was the right thing to do, you know? So if you did sit down with someone who you can see a bit of a future with and go, I'd love that you I don't, I love that you look after your mother, or I love that you take care of your parents, or I love that you always dress well, or whatever. And those are the things, as you say, when things maybe get a bit rocky down the road, you can just go back over that as a checklist and go, do I still take care of myself? Am I still nice to my mother?
I love that.
Do I still do what?
Yeah,
I think it's great.
You've articulated it so much better than I did, that if you don't know what those traits are, how are you going to hone them? So on that note, we will wrap up there. If people want to find your work, come see you perform sometime, what should they look out for?
Well, Laughter Lounge, at Stevie Cummins on Twitter. Do you know what you do? Be nice on Twitter. There's another one. Be nice. If you follow me on Twitter, be nice to people on Twitter. Yeah, I'm terrible at self-marketing. I'm easy to find. I do a lot of news talk. If you ever turn on news talk, you're bound to hear me at some stage talking. I do a lot on radio because I'm opinionated but uninformed, which is exactly what you want on radio. Because if I knew what I was talking about, it'd be a bit boring. But instead, I'm just winging it all the time. So,
love that. All right, we'll wrap up there. Thank you.
Bobby, lovely.
Thanks for listening.
For the full experience, you can join our subscription on Apple Podcasts to access extended ad-free episodes. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
The music is Digital Damage by me, Emma Becco.
We're proud to be an independent production.
And leaving a quick review is another way to support the show.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.